a play call!
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Maureen. Hey, Maureen, longtime listener. How are you?
Hey, guys. I literally just pulled over. I'm driving for work down towards Richmond, and I was like, I got to pull over to the rest stop and call you guys. But that interview was so great, and you were just referencing it, but that's 100% what struck me when all of a sudden he's saying, hey, EB, hey, yeah. Kate. I mean, just what a change, and just, so excited for this next season. I remember Feinstein specifically talking about that, you know, every Friday, just what a difference the ownership when they were addressed the media, Dan Quinn, you know, it's just, I don't know.
It's night
exciting.
And day.
I love it. Yeah. It's night and day. Yeah.
The culture has completely changed.
I wanted to ask him is how do you wrap your brain around the fact that, I mean, there's no way you're going to be like 90% on fourth down again. There's no way we're going to win six games in a row in the last possession.
Right.
Like, I know we're better, but that's like it's unsustainable.
There might be some regression there. That's only natural.
Yeah, but part of, at least for one season and in college, part of Jaden's ability is being able to perform in the clutch. Like, giving him the ball at the end of the game, I'd feel more confident than not that he's going to deliver.
Yeah, I just don't feel confident that we're going to convert all those fourth downs.
I'm pretty confident
when you have Jaden,
they'll convert a lot of them.
When you have Jaden, it's a cheat code. Yeah, it's absolutely
a cheat code quarterback.
I understand.
That helps you pick up that short yardage that you need, and sometimes longer yardage.
Right.
He wasn't picking up just fourth and ones all the time.
Okay.
But I like that DQ, he just goes for it. He takes them out of his pants and he puts them on the table. By the way, speaking of that, Valdez, can you go back and substitute Dan Quinn's name in for all of my Ben Johnson love during the offseason? Because I'm in the tank for DQ. Even though Ben Johnson was my guy, I love me some DQ. He's my guy. He's here now. Ben Johnson, he's a little fling. Now he's in Chicago. Who cares about him?
You are the king of 180s.
I never really wanted Ben Johnson.
You are the king of that.
I will be honest. I was smitten by Ben Johnson and his high-flying offense.
It's a weasel.
Hey, can I explain?
He's kind of a weasel.
Yeah. Can I explain the one-score fourth-quarter regressions?
Sure.
To people a little bit better? It's not that Jaden will fail on a game-winning or game-tying drive. It's that in these one-score games, Jaden and the team may not be in the position to win or tie on a fourth quarter drive because maybe the defense, they allow the other team's offense to chew more clock. So the situation is still the same where it is a one score game late in the fourth quarter, but the scenario isn't always the same. For instance, if Jaden Daniels gets the ball with 2 minutes to go and it's like the Eagles game, well, what if it's the Eagle game scenario all over and there's only 15 seconds left? Like, that's how you would regress in these fourth quarter games.
Well, of course, if there's 15 seconds left, the chance of you succeed is very, very low. Of course.
I know, but I'm saying these...
But I'm saying there's going to be times where it's the last possession, Matt. There's 2 minutes left, and we just fail.
That's true, too, but it's also... It's the same stat. So if you lose by three to the Cowboys, you know, on paper, if Jaden gets the ball with 15 seconds left, it's not necessarily
I hear what you're
able
saying.
To do, and you
it's
can't
not
be heroic.
Apples to apples,
but
for sure.
but it's still a fourth quarter, you know, loss in a one score game.
Understood. I'm just saying, all things being equal, though, like, I just don't think we're going to be able to convert.
You're saying you're not going to get the breaks that you had, the number of breaks you had last year.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we ran hot.
They were 20 for 23, which was 87% on fourth.
Which is by far the best. Yeah. The league.
Okay, second place was 72%.
What if they slip back to 80%, 78 to 80%?
I think that's still pretty damn good. That would still be a league record before last year. I think they were like above and beyond normal. I think they blew away the record.
They did at 87%, but there were three teams in the 70s. All really good teams. Eagles, Chiefs, Bills. Hey,
yeah. You just have to come
all
to
with really
with
good quarterbacks.
Jaden Daniels is that good. Yeah. Jaden Daniels is that special.
Remember, I have zero doubts about him. Zero.
Remember there were some times where it was 4th and 7, fourth and nine. I mean, it's 4th and 1's okay.
Yeah.
Doable. But there we had some long 4th down conversions.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I mean, those are the ones that probably
and those
come
are
back
typically
down.
The ones where he just took off running.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm bullish. I'm just also a little bit scared. I am bullish. I mean, I think we're a better football team for sure on paper until, you know, until we start losing guys. For sure, we're better.
Well, I mean, it's an old team, so don't be surprised if there are some key injuries to some of the older players.
I don't mind little nicks. I just don't. We can't afford, like, losing guys for the year.
Right.
You know, especially any of our top guys.
Well, can't control that.
What was your interpretation of what he said about Marshawn Lattimore, your guy?
Extreme competitor.
I mean, I don't know what else you wanted him to say.
Healthy.
You tried to get something out of him. When we went to the happy hour, you tried to get something out of him on Marshawn there.
Yeah, I wanted to just find out how he looked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he skirted it. He didn't really want to talk about it. But, I mean, it seems like, and it's not just from what Dan said. I mean, from everyone that's out at camp, the media, they say he looks great. Secondary looks great.
Yeah, the secondary saying is markedly improved. I haven't heard that Marshawn in particular looks great, but I've heard that he certainly looks healthier.
Yeah, I saw Scott Abraham have a conversation with him, and he said that he's felt himself since minicamp.
His hamstring's good.
Uh-huh.
Squared away there.
All right, good.
That's good.
Should give you some confidence.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Hey, some of the games they wouldn't even throw his way, and then he faced.
That was one game.
And then
he
faced
one game against New Orleans.
Right. Then he faced. Mm-hmm. You know,
AJ Brown
and Mike Evans. It was a different story.
He looked like. Right,
but those guys are great.
They're going to beat a lot of corners.
Exactly.
I know.
But you're right. I mean, Lattimore did not play well.
He was getting smoked.
He didn't play well.
He didn't look like the guy that. I don't think they got the guy.
But he's also motivated.
Were. Okay, all right.
You know, he's motivated.
You can be motivated all you want. If you're broken, you're broken.
Well, if he's broken,
then
it's
a bust. I feel like he got smoked by, like, beaten by 10, 15 yards. He was,
it's hard
like,
to get beat
right there.
When you're grabbing him.
Right, he's very physical.
You can't get beat by 15 yards when you jump on top of the guy.
He's a physical corner.
Yeah.
He's a competitor.
Yeah, I like
Coach
that.
Quinn just told us.
Yeah.
So I told you I wanted to give you a few guys that I thought had really good practices.
Yes, indeed.
Rookie wide receiver Jalen Lane out of Virginia Tech, Danny. Continues to impress me. I have low expectations for him this season, specifically because I think the role he's mostly going to play in this offense is the Deebo Samuel role of like jet action in the backfield, some bubble and screen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if Debo's healthy, that's going to be him. But also because last year, you know, Jalen Lane is a wide receiver at Virginia Tech, caught only 38 balls. It wasn't like he was overly involved. For his college career, he had a couple hundred catches, mostly Middle Tennessee State. Last 2 years at Virginia Tech, he caught 79 balls in the ACC. But I will say today, he caught 2 long balls where he got wide open deep from Sam Hartman. One was on like a deep corner route where Hartman rolled out against his arm to the left out of the pocket and kind of set and threw, and Lane was behind everybody and would have scored on a long touchdown. Another was on a seam shot down the field where he just got behind his assignment and made a really nice hands catch. But he is just extremely noticeable. I was standing next to Brian Mitchell as he was, you know, scoring one of the touchdowns, and B. Mitch was saying, like, he just keeps making plays. That's all you can do. And he's listed. I've stood next to him. He's not a big guy, like around 5'10-ish maybe, but he's got speed. He's got twitch. He's got some wiggle in the open field. I am 100% intrigued by Jalen Lane.
I wonder what, if everything was ideal and he had every opportunity and was, you know, fed the ball appropriately, et cetera, what his ceiling is. Because I just don't know. You mentioned the college production. And Middle Tennessee State was a 70-catch, 940-yard receiver. I have no idea who they're playing against. I don't know if that's valid, not valid, whatever. Then at Virginia Tech, quarterback issues abound. Got used, you know, almost as much in terms of jet sweeps and those kind of actions as they did throwing him the football. But that doesn't necessarily tell you all the traits. It doesn't tell you that had he gone somewhere else, more prolific or the more wide-open offense or an air raid type system, what could he have done? I don't know. The things that you haven't seen from college are some of the route running, the precision, what can you do in the full route tree, et cetera. I still don't know that. I can't. That's one of those guys that I cannot wait to see in preseason.
Well, he told us when we talked to him after the draft, if you remember, that he thought he was going to bring speed, the ability to get open down the field. And you've seen that in practice. Whether that translated in the game or not, I'm not sure. But how I would say it is kind of what you just said, which is we are closing in on a preseason game against the New England Patriots. It'd be great to be there and to be lucky enough to be at that practice. It's on the road. I'm not traveling. Because the 11-on-11 work would be great as well. It's the same as a game, essentially. Might even be more helpful to dictate who's what and who's not. Just to watch those situations, those game reps that you're getting. But in the preseason game, I'm guessing that a guy like that is going to play a lot. Especially without Terry McLaurin. It's not like you're going to have Deebo Samuel playing in that game for more than a series, if at all. So that means someone like Jalen Lane's going to get reps. And I am fired up to watch him. I mentioned Sam Hartman threw him both of those passes. Hartman had a really good day today. And I've kind of been wondering, does he just go on the practice squad again, or does he make the team? You've got Jaden Daniels as your starter, and Marcus Mariota as your backup. There are two other quarterbacks at camp. It's Hartman in year two, and then Josh Johnson, who they brought in, who has played for a near record amount of teams at the quarterback position. Start at camp, I would have bet Josh Johnson's the three, just like Driscoll was the three last year, and Hartman just remains on the practice squad. And that might actually be what they do and what they're thinking. I don't know. Is someone going to pluck Sam Hartman? Probably not. I mean, unless you get points for having a handsome quarterback in your building. Is that something you're necessarily going to waste a roster spot to bring in Hartman as a number three? They could probably put him on the P-Squad, but you developed him last year. You spent a lot of time, a lot of energy with him. I'd imagine he's gotten a lot better from being in your building. I like how he's performing. Is there a chance he could be their third quarterback? And you lop off what was Driscoll last year, and instead of having two veteran backups, you just have the one with Hartman as a three. Would that be an issue for anybody? I don't think that would be a problem.
I don't think so. I mean, again, at some point, you got to let the bird that's been in the cage fly. And what I mean is, you how many mentors does somebody need, right? Like Driscoll, who's been around, who's a journeyman, to do what Mariota's doing. It's almost like a repeat situation. At some point, you got to let these guys grow together. And you let Jaden Daniels go from neophyte rookie to, he's not a rookie anymore. I mean, he's got legend of the NFC title game. Now kind of allow him to sort of assert more comfort. And, so I wouldn't necessarily hesitate to have a younger player with not a lot of experience as part of that quarterback room as the third guy.
Now, here's an observation, and if you go out there as a fan, you might see some of this stuff that I've had for 2 years, which is when you're doing things where you're just throwing the football or like four guys are side by side going through quarterbacking drills, I think Hartman never stands out. He does not have an arm at what I would even say like average NFL level. The example I'll give you is you've seen, I'm sure, a million times the videos and the pictures of them throwing the ball into the net.
Uh-huh.
They do it every practice. Just the couple of times I've watched, Josh Johnson's really good at that. Jaden Daniels is probably the best at that. Marcus Mariota has some success. It seems like if I was to rank the four of them, Hartman would probably not be high on that list. And I'm not saying that means anything. In fact, I would say that it doesn't really. But when they're all in a line dropping back to throw the football, same thing. You're seeing who spins it, what's it look like. And Jaden Daniels stands out. I would say Hartman's kind of the opposite of that. But I do think when you get an 11-on-11, and you see this in his career when he was at Notre Dame or before that at Wake, maybe he's a gamer. He's got some Heinicke to him, but mm-hmm. He just doesn't play in games. Like, what if you're a gamer that never plays in a game? I think there's a little bit of like a Taylor Heinicke to Sam Hart.
Yeah, that was sort of the Case Keenum deal or Colt McCoy, where it's like he's not going to wow you in shorts and a t-shirt.
Think baseball. Bullpen session. You're not walking away impressed.
Yeah, like
you get him out there and he's adding, subtracting, and he's competing, and he's setting guys up and reading swings. Maybe he could be effective.
You remember Chad Cordero, who was awesome, came in studio with us, like talking about his bullpen session where he was throwing like 88, bounced a bunch of sliders, and he's like, oh my God, I'm not even getting drafted, let alone, you know, where he ended up going. Comes in and has an unbelievable career because they saw something. It was more than just, you know, as you said, what the radar gun said.
So two other quick observations from practice today. Quan Martin had a really good sequence. He's had a good camp in general, but back-to-back plays, batted ball at the line of scrimmage, leaping on a blitz, and then he had a TFL, or would have been a TFL, where he thumped Austin Eckler in the backfield. But I thought it was interesting they were bringing him downhill a lot in what was a red zone period, but I would say even more like a goal to go. It seemed to me like they were set up around the 9 or 10-yard line, running goal line stuff from basically the high goal line area. And I thought he did just a couple of things that stood out and showed speed. But he's had a good camp, and he's turned into a nice player. So Quan Martin, I'll give a star two for today. And then lastly, I know people are probably tired of hearing about this, and this has already become too much in terms of the hype train, but really nice day for Jacory Kroski-Merritt again. He had one particular run off the edge on a stretch run, where he kind of super patient behind pullers. Think like Portis behind Mike Sellers back in the day, where he's like waiting. Hits the hole, jump cuts, gets to the edge, gets angled out of bounds, picked up like 10, 12 yards. But Deebo Samuel came run. He was on the sideline, not even on the field. Comes running over to dap him up. It was one of those plays where if you're watching it, you go, damn, that was pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
And he has a few of those, uh-huh. You know, where there's a little bit of burst. They had another drill today where running backs were working on jumping over these bags, like goal line, can you leap over the pile, I guess is the idea. Think about when you're trying to go over the top of the O-line, D-line to plunge into the end zone. And at the end of practice, of the running backs that were still doing this, earlier in the day, Austin Eckler, I guess, had successfully jumped over four. Like, he was the only guy after practice who was tired, spent, sweaty, whatever, who could clear four bags. I mean, it's a huge vertical. I mean, this would have been like a dunk contest.
Right.
Like, bring me out there, you have to jump over me. Like, he was the
basically
only one
that, a couple steps and a high jump over four. Yeah.
Chris Rodriguez was like plunging into all four bags. yeah. Brian Robinson like wasn't really getting close. Merritt just comes up twice, does it. He went for five and almost did that. But he's clearly a pretty explosive athlete. I just like what I see. Now, until he plays in a game, none of it matters. But you want to talk about being excited for Jalen Lane against the Patriots next week? Merritt is on the short list.
I got to figure it out. I mean, the whole goal is to figure out what's real in the preseason and what's not. I mean, you've seen so many stellar preseason performances, and around here, it's what we majored in for decades. But every once in a while, when the quarterback is tearing it up, and you go, maybe that guy should be the starter. He should be. See Gus Frerotte, or see Trent Green, or see some of the guys that stood out as the second or third dude, and eventually they got the call and were pretty good. You're just sort of looking for some of those traits. It's so hard to tell when the other team's not scheming. It's hard to tell when you're going against guys that they're going to be delivering furniture in a couple of weeks. You never really know until, as you said, the real lights come on and everything, but you could sort of see signs. You could look for those kind of moments. I mean, to me, that it's like NBA Summer League to a degree, where the only thing I care about is if you can't do it at all. If you can't do it there, we have an enormous problem. I won't know for sure that you're 1,000-yard back in waiting if you tear up the Patriots second team, but I'd rather see that than not.
Yeah, you got to show me something.
Live in Ashburn, VA. Commanders training camp. I thought today was the best practice they've had.
Most intense, I can tell you that.
Yeah, dude. And it's good to see them do some run install.
Yep.
And just some actual football, or close to actual football. I did not notice Ben Sennett out there today. Did you see him at all?
No, I didn't notice Ben.
And last time we were out here, which was Tuesday, right? I did see him kind of walk off of trainers, and it doesn't look like anything major. Guys missed time. It's certainly not a big deal. But something to kind of keep track of. I want to run through. I took a bunch of notes today, kind of everything I saw. B, I'm curious, you know, where you agree with me, where you think things are different. A big thing that stood out for me was just the play of Lane and Merritt, but Lane especially. I thought Deebo has looked great. And for all the talk of, like, is he heavy or any of that stuff, man, I have not seen it. He looks very interesting.
He's bigger than – he's never been built like a receiver.
Right.
And he looks thicker than receivers, but – that we have to tell you that there were a lot of people out there that was just trying to hate on him from the 49er area, and a lot of people in Philly that was trying to knock it because they don't want not like anything down here, and just ignore that because the dude is in shape. When I talked to Nikki, she was talking about how fast he was in off season. When that same day when people was talking about how out of shape he was when he was doing a jog walkthrough. When he caught the touchdown 2 days ago, and when he caught the touchdown today, he was in front of the defensive back that could run. Okay, so you got to just ignore some of that stupidity. That's that noise. We can't give that any credence anymore.
Totally agree, man. Totally agree. I think I do think Debo and Lane have stood out, but the rest of these guys have not. Well, not to say they've been bad.
Brooks has stood out at times, 16.
I'm just saying it's been inconsistent.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is the time of the year where you can allow that inconsistency. But Brooks shows a possibility. He's about 6'2", 6'3", also. Sure. I like Strachan. He's about 6'4", 84.
Yeah.
He's a bigger guy. But, you know, and, like you said, he's an inconsistent guy.
And I want to say Brown. But we're not seeing much of Noah. And I understand because they're working him back in slowly.
Yeah, yeah.
But we haven't seen much of Noah Brown.
Yeah.
But when he's out there, he was out there Tuesday and looked good. So, to me, there's like a fairly clear separation with the receivers of Lane, Debo, Noah Brown. But then outside of that, there's guys that make flash plays. Certainly, I think Brooks is a very interesting player.
Mm-hmm.
Strachan has made plays. Chris Moore at times has made plays. KJ Osborne at times
Chris
has made Moore
plays. Been around 10 years.
But, like, there was a play in the end zone today that you really like to see Chris Moore get to that ball, and he doesn't. There was a play down the sideline today where you really like to see KJ Osborne get to that ball, and he doesn't.
Yeah, there was bringing in.
There was a play on the side, like going out towards the left hash, that Luke McCaffrey had an opportunity, got a hand on it, couldn't bring it in. Mm-hmm. Like, there has been – it's like my golf game, consistently inconsistent. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we're seeing from the receivers not named Debo, Jalen, and Noah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's to be expected from those guys. But also, if you want to make a team, you have to do the unexpected. And I think ultimately at this time of the year, you're going to have those things where the names we just threw out there, guys that have bounced around, guys that haven't found somewhere to lock into. And they're going to have to try to find a way to get it done because we don't know how things are going to work. But I can tell you like this here, the more it goes, if they're really paying attention to this field, you feel like you got to lean and get 17 back on the field.
Totally, man. And you wonder, I mean, so Terry's agent, Buddy Baker, was not here on Tuesday. I saw him today. He is here today. AP's here. Josh Harris was here today. I don't know that will make anything move faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, sometimes you just bump into a dude in the hallway and you at least talk for a second.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Make eye contact with people. You know how that is, Jay? I say, I'm not going to sign today. I walk in, I make eye contact, and then I'm signing all day. Just got to learn how to tunnel vision.
Right.
And tunnel hearing, too. I did that today. It worked.
Yeah. People, you want to explain that or no?
It's one guy, man. It's like, dude, if I'm working, you said my name, and then you spoke, and I spoke to you. Then you said the name again, and you said something else. So you did this twice. So the third time you decide, come over here, let me sign something for me. I don't mind signing stuff. But just like my brother would call me and say, I just called to tell you I love you. And he hangs the phone up. I know he finna call me back. Ain't gonna ask me for something. So when you have to play the games, I don't deal with it. So once I'm locked in and watching practice, I'm not going over to sign. I'll sign before, after, but I'm not doing it when I'm locked in. I got a job to do in a few days, 8 days? I got a call.
Right.
I got to know these names. I got to know stuff about the kid. I got to have little tidbits to say. Have to understand that sometimes. But the one guy just said my name about how many times? At least 15 while you were there.
Yeah.
And it was about 15 before you, and it kept going after it. I'm like, dog, I hear you. But I also said I was working.
Landfill. I haven't told Brian this, but I do have a theory what the gentleman wanted to say to Brian that was so urgent, Landfill. Do you have a guess what I think it was?
I'm thinking that it was back in 1989 he met Beamish at a bar in Baton Rouge.
See, that is close, but I think it was 1997 Modell's grand opening at the Fair Lakes Mall.
Yeah, that was Landfield.
And he met B. Mitch.
That was
he saw him at a Chili's in Centerville.
I almost wish you went over there just so we could find out if that's what he wanted.
No, he wanted me to sign it.
B, you remember we met at Home Depot.
He wanted me to sign
in Herndon.
When earlier I was right there next to him and I signed something for him. And then, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, you know, people – people talk to you and start at, and then know the other people around them think they know you.
Right.
So they give them their stuff, give him their stuff to get signed. I already know the game, dog.
Overwhelmingly, everybody's been cool. We're always happy to take photos, sign, whatever it is you want. Sometimes we got to work. Sometimes I got to run away, and it's not a personal thing.
JP run on y'all all the time, not sometimes.
Dog, I've been.
You signed 2 out of 10.
Not true. I've signed everything anyone has asked me to do.
Mm-mm.
That is absolutely
factual. You taught me how to walk past the people when they call your name.
That's
bull. I learned that from you.
Now you're really.
You're like, just keep walking, B. Don't pay attention to them.
That is such.
My ear's big, and I don't hear them.
Oh, that is such BS. I think it's. I think there was a veteran today that put on a clinic as far as why the team values him so much. Zach Ertz.
Yes.
I thought it was just phenomenal.
Zach is that guy where in crunch time, he's open. When you're looking for the people down the field but you can't find them and you got to drop it off somewhere, he's open. He's sure-handed, and he makes himself accessible. And I think that right there is why he's around here. And I think that's part of what Bobby Wagner was talking about, where even Von Miller, as you get a little bit older, you don't have to be the fastest. You just got to know what the hell you're doing. And I think Zach Ertz understands the body movement and body positioning and how to position himself to where the quarterback will find you. When Jaden comes from looking up top to coming down, he doesn't come and have to find him. He comes up top, boom, let the ball go. Because he know he's going to have somebody there. Once you get that mindset with a quarterback, you're going to get some passes coming to you very often.
I mean, you could just see how comfortable Jaden is with Ertz. And it really, really stands out. I thought he was really good today. I thought the line was pretty good. I thought you saw plenty of push both in pass pro.
Yeah.
You did see a couple. You know who's been flying to the ball is Igbinoghene.
Yes. He's playing. Like today, I watched the play. It was. They ran a cross route, Debo and I think it was Jalen. And Igbinoghene hit his linebacker, fell to the ground, was able to get up and knock the ball down. And Jaden tried to come to Debo. So the dude hustles, man.
Yeah.
And we saw last year, he had some good plays, but he had some down plays. But this year, he seems to be a little bit more consistent to me.
I also noticed Tyler Owens got a lot of run today. I don't know if maybe Will Harris didn't get as much.
Will had a good bit. I watched him.
Early in red zone, but when they started doing the full field stuff, it seemed like I saw more Owens than Harris. Maybe they're just trying to get a better look at Owens. Maybe it was just a rotational basis.
I saw one time Dan threw, it was like a second team, third team defense, and
yep.
He's like, no. He threw him off, and he brought first team offense.
I saw
first
that.
Defense.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, the coach wants to see. Want to see the best against the best. And when he went like that, guess who I saw out there, receiver? Jalen Lane. And he did catch one down the middle. Touchdown.
Yeah, man. And one thing that's cool with Lane is, like, Debo, especially in 11-on-11, is working with Jaden. And then Debo's not working. Lane is working with Jaden. Lane caught a deep one from Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Lane is just going as much as possible, as he should be, but it's just giving him that much more opportunity. And I think it's advantageous for the young man. I think he's really been standing out. And I try to – I think sometimes people get too excited too fast. Like, one day of practice, dude makes a nice play, and it's like, oh, dude, watch this guy. Like, we've been out here a week now. We've seen two padded practices. Today was a long session.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be ups and downs for all these dudes, and I think you can clearly see, like, the ups for some of these guys. I'm also excited about the DBs. I just think it's a really good situation. If they can stay healthy. Now, we didn't see Lattimore today, and I was told – there were no veteran days. But, like, what's the difference between a veteran day and, like, Lat's pinky toe is hurt. We're letting him chill today.
the veteran days sometimes is that the veteran is on out there practicing and he go getting that dog. They have those days too.
Sure. We got White Brian in the chat talking about Auburn. I mean, things are happening out here.
Man.
I just saw this picture. So this is from Bales, who listens to the show all the time. Look at this picture, B. I guess Von Miller gave this little boy his cleat.
The cleat is almost bigger than the little boy.
It's bigger than he is shoulder to shoulder.
Did he sign it for him?
I don't know.
It looked like the front part is signed. Right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, you're right.
Cool, cool.
I love that, dude.
This stream is killing me today, bro.
Yeah, what is going on? White Brian, let's try to troubleshoot this for B. Every other thing on your computer that's connected to the internet is working appropriately, correct?
Yeah.
So I just...
The stream goes up and then it drops. Up, then it drops. I'm about to ignore it completely.
Yeah, that's annoying as hell, dude. I could try to troubleshoot it, but I might not solve it.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. When we come back, Jaden Daniels spoke to the media. Jaden was relatively brief. I imagine Jaden was pretty damn hot. That's one thing, players this year. So I was at Channel 4 last night, and Amelia was doing the weather. And she said to Sean Yancey at one point, this is either the second or third most humid summer since, like, records have been kept of humidity. And I believe it, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's been – I don't like to complain about the hot in the summer because I love the summer and I know it's going to be hot. But this last week or 10 days has been...
This is reminding me of my childhood.
I bet, man.
Yeah.
Because you know who said that to me was Revo, who grew up, you know, panhandle of Florida, I believe, like Pensacola guy. And he's like, man, you know, I'm used to this from Florida, but it doesn't always feel like Florida up here. And I don't think he's lying, man. It's been next level hot, and I think probably next level hot for everybody.
And that statement you just made, I think me, Landfill, and the crew basically say you're lying. You like to complain about everything, dog.
I do complain about everything, but summer's my favorite season.
But you complain about that, too.
No, I will mention it.
You talk about it's hot. That's complaining.
Nah, there's a difference.
Yep.
Mentioning versus complaining.
JP, you are a complainer. I think your middle name is complaining.
I'm a professional complainer, Brian.
It is the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in. You can tweet me at the Denton Day. We spent a lot of conversation, a lot of time on the Terry McLaurin contract. We will get back to that, but there are other players on the team and other players that I am excited about entering the year 2025. Like most of you, the player that I am most excited about is the guy that wears number 5 on his chest, Jaden Daniels. He did a couple of interviews yesterday. There were a lot of national people at practice yesterday. There were some ESPN people. I know the Barstool guys,
the National Sports Podcast,
were out there. They were doing Grit Week. Yeah.
Yes.
They were doing Grit Week out there. I saw that they had posted the Baltimore stuff today. Mm-hmm. So I guess Washington is going tomorrow.
Something
I thought
like
they finished at Baltimore though. I don't know.
No. So they do Monday, Wednesday, Friday show releases. They were at Ravens camp at the beginning of the week. Yesterday they were at Commanders camp, and now today they're in Philly at Eagles camp. So, and they mentioned on the podcast today that I was listening to that they talked to Von Miller as well. So that interview will probably be coming
Jaden
out next week.
So it was Jaden and Von. So we are getting Jaden Daniels content from the Barstool guys.
I'm almost certain that they sat down, because they sat down with Caleb last year. Why wouldn't they sit down with Jaden this year?
Right, right. So that will be fun to see, and we will discuss that when that does release. I thought they did Baltimore second because I'd seen something on Twitter about them taking batting practice at the Orioles ballpark.
That was
like,
yesterday.
They're definitely not doing that here. At Nats Park. So anyway, we will get to that. But there was an analyst on ESPN, a guy we're very familiar with, Louis Riddick, who was asked on the Get Up show. I think he was on Get Up.
It's usually Get Up.
He was on Get Up, and he was asked about Jaden Daniels in 2024 and potential, or 2025. And listen to what he said about Jaden in 2025.
You, Jaden Daniels, the sophomore season. Mm-hmm. If I said he's going to be the MVP of the league this year, would you tell me that was ridiculous?
No, I would tell you that could very, very well happen. There's a good shot that may happen. This guy is unique. Now, we talk about unicorns all the time. This guy is a unicorn in terms of his football character, how mature he is. I watched him the other day have a media session. I'm sitting there going, has this guy played in the league 4 or 5 years? He's the unquestioned leader. He's one of the best leaders probably this football team has had in, what, 2 decades?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is without a doubt the head of the snake there, and I don't see him taking a step back at all. Don't mess it up with Terry McLaurin. get his guy in there to a contract, not just in the building. Get him signed to a contract.
Listen to.
All right, so Lewis Riddick wants Terry to get signed. All of us agree. And he thinks it's not crazy that Jaden could be MVP in 2025. So I have been very hesitant, Max, to really jump into the pool of Jaden for MVP. And there's a couple of different reasons for that. First and foremost,
a lot of players in the league.
There's a lot of players in the league. And Lamar played out of his mind last year. He didn't win it. Josh Allen played out of his mind. He did win it, right? Jared Goff had a great season to start, and he was not even in the conversation at the end of it. This is a very, very long, long season, right? I'm cautious because at the beginning of last year, really this time last year, one of the favorites for MVP was C.J. Stroud. And C.J. Stroud's season in 2024 was not nearly as productive as it was in 2023. Now, did C.J. Stroud take a massive step back? I don't really think so. They still made it to the playoffs. They still won the division. They still got to the set. Like they did. They got to literally every single place that they did the year before. His number, he just turned the ball over a little bit more.
So I got a little nugget because I just quickly Googled. I was like, what were C.J. Stroud's preseason MVP odds in 2024? It was plus 850. Do you want to know who is currently plus 850 to win MVP and will probably be the most bet to win MVP? Jaden Daniels.
Yep. The correlation between the two of them is, as a gambler, you realize more than anything trends. You focus on numbers.
Absolutely.
You look at trends. The trending with Jaden and CJ Stroud is very difficult to miss. Now, certain sports books are going to price this differently. I happen to work for the BetMGM Network, so I tend to use their sports book, and that is where Jaden is plus 850. If you can shop that around, maybe you can find it at 9-1. There might be some books that have that at +7 or just +8 on the money, right? Not plus 850. So shop around for deals if you are willing to jump into this market. But I'm hesitant because there are so many similarities. And I just, when it comes to putting your money down, you just got to be a little cautious about that. Now, I'm also self-aware enough to realize I just think that Jaden was better than C.J. Stroud was when you compare the two rookie years.
And another thing on all of that is, what did C.J. Stroud do after his first season? He went on a little bit of like a media tour with Micah Parsons. They were rubbing elbows, doing the podcast thing.
The podcast, the media tour. They were in France, I think, together. Yep. Which Jaden did go to France this offseason, so that's like not the greatest example. But they were doing fashion shows.
Exactly.
They were everywhere. They were doing other people's podcasts together. And so far as I know, outside of the Barstool thing,
which was at the Commander's facility,
which was them coming to him. And I can't imagine they were with him very long.
No, it'd probably be like 30 minutes, probably, 45 minutes at most.
Honestly, I don't even think it was that. So if
good chance.
What he did with Kevin Clark yesterday on ESPN, which we pulled some sound about Dan Quinn talking about Jaden. Jaden was on with Kevin Clark. I watched it yesterday. It was fine. It was not like a ton, but it was fine. That was a stand-up. You're not standing up for 30 minutes. That's like that's like a five-minute max thing, and I think he was with Kevin Clark for 4.5 minutes. I would imagine that Jaden is with Barstool for longer than that, but it's not like, unless they had a set out there, it's not like they had a bunch of chairs there to sit there and talk for 30 minutes the way that they do at certain other establishments. So that could have also been like a 6 to 8 minute thing. If you're a rampant Barstool listener, which I'm not like a stoolie by any sense of the word. I do like Grit Week just because it's, I think players give the Barstool guys a little bit more.
Yeah, they're a little bit more comfortable.
Traditional media. The Barstool guys do a really good job of opening the personality up, which Jaden just in general, like I thought Chick Hernandez had a really good interview, a really good sit down with him last week. Like Chick did a really good job, but Jaden just feels a little bit more comfortable. I mean, even the SportsCenter thing where he's hyping up the crowd of like, Terry, like when he's doing all that, there is a comfortability to it, so I think he'll probably do a little bit with the Barstool. But you're right, he's not doing this massive tour.
Yeah.
like CJ. And to his credit, if you have the season that CJ did, you are entitled to go do all of the things. Like, embrace being an NFL football player. I'm not going to take anything away from a guy that decides to embrace being an NFL football player. And because from the looks of it, CJ Stroud kept the main thing the main thing. Again, like, the issues that he had in 2024 were very much the offensive line was all over the place.
Oh, absolutely.
A little alarming because his left tackle now plays here, but that's, you know, we're not going to get into that. That's not here nor there. That unit as a whole had exceeded its ceiling. Like, it hit it, we're done, we're not going further, we need to make some adjustments. Their whole coaching staff was a mess in there as well. Remember, Bobby Slowick was supposed to be Kid Wonder, and he was very much not. He had coaching opportunities, decided to come back to Houston to be an OC again, and that didn't work. So, like, there were a lot of things outside of just C.J. Stroud not playing as well statistically that went into his step back last year. I anticipate that some of those issues are not going to be here. There might be a few things that make their way here, like the offensive line has seemingly a little bit of work to do in the early portions of training camp, but I'm not going to watch one padded practice in July and make a declaration about how good or bad the offensive line is going to be in 2025. Training camp is training camp for a reason. It's about getting better. It is about establishing continuity with one another and a chemistry with one another. You're kind of supposed to look bad now. And I'd much prefer you look bad now than look bad when the season starts. So I feel pretty okay about the offensive line. I think the talent itself is pretty good. And once they decide who is going to be starting where, which I don't think they have done yet, which is another thing that is going to be important. What do you do with Connerly? Is he going to be your right tackle? Are you going to start Wiley at right tackle? Wiley is not the long-term right tackle, but I thought he was at the very least passable for a majority of the year last year. Connerly, of course, you're hoping is the guy that is going to be a stalwart at that position, at least while Laremy Tunsil is here, and then maybe Connerly switches over to left. Like, there's a bunch of stuff there, right? But once you get the actual, all right, here's who's going to be playing what position for the offensive line, you'll be a little bit better. So I do think Washington has set themselves up to be more successful than C.J. Stroud was with Houston last year, meaning that Jaden Daniels could be more successful statistically than C.J. Stroud was in year number two. But then this is where the personal thing gets into it, Max. And here's the personal bit. I hate betting on my team. We have in the gambling world what is called a happiness hedge, which is where you will sometimes bet against your team. And I didn't do that a lot last year. In fact, I think I did it maybe once.
I think I did it more with the Caps than I did the Commanders.
Right. You do that more with the Caps, more with the Nationals. I didn't do it a lot with Washington last year because they started winning a bunch. And I was like, I don't need the money that much. I'd just rather them win.
Right.
But you do a happiness hedge, or in this instance, you just don't bet on your favorite player to win MVP. I did that a bunch with Juan Soto when he was here, and you will know that Juan Soto never won an MVP.
Rookie of the year bet, though, baby.
Hey, there you go. See, hey. You were ahead of the game with that. I didn't bet him to win rookie of the year. So I'm a little cautious of betting Jaden to win MVP, especially knowing that the schedule is going to be more difficult. And for all intents and purposes, they are correct when Washington was not crazy smitten by the injury bug last year. Brian Robinson missed some time. Biadasz missed some time. It's not that there weren't injuries. There very much were. Noah Brown was not eligible for a majority of the second half of the season due to the internal organ situation going on there. So Jaden did lose out on a number of different guys. So to say that Washington didn't have any injuries would not be the case. There was just no injuries to the most important players in 2024, but the most important player outside of Jaden is currently not practicing right now because of the contract standoff between him and the team. And as we cycle back to the Terry thing, I thought it was interesting what Steve Wyche said about the contract, and it's the guarantees that he thinks are holding up. Now, this is not like a report. He was not reporting that. He said this is his gut feel. He says that I feel like it is the guarantees that are holding this up from being a completed deal. My entire argument yesterday was take care of your player with guarantees, not the AAV. The AAV is a pride thing with athletes. The guarantees are what you should really care about. Like, when we see these big contract numbers and you say it's it's X amount of years for X amount of dollars. That dollar number is going to be sky high, but it's the guarantees that are really what you should be looking at, because once the guarantees run out, you do the holdout, I want a new contract thing all over again. So if it's the guarantees that are holding up this contract with Terry McLaurin, if he wants significantly more guaranteed than DK Metcalf, that would be something that I'm open to, because you can still hit that AAV at a lower rate with that guaranteed money, and you have set yourself up as a team to have a good amount of cap space now. Like right now, they have $21 million of open cap space that you could very much utilize a lot of that in a first-year guarantee for Terry. You're going to have a lot of guarantee or contract or cap space next year as well. And then after next year, that cap space is theoretically going to take a major hit, because that is when the Jaden contract is going to come about. So that is the, you know, that is a thing of, that is a thing of itself. But I think the guarantees are, if that is what's holding this up, that would lead me to believe, Max, that things are maybe a little bit closer than people have been telling us. Because I don't feel like you can be that far off on the guarantees.
I would hope. But at the same time, when you look at the guarantee breakdown, like it, after CeeDee Lamb had 67 guaranteed, DK's got 60. So in theory, if that was the issue and you want, he wanted, quote unquote, significantly more than DK Metcalf in guarantees, what would you probably, I feel like I would smack dab in the middle at that, probably around 64 and a half, 65.
64 and a half. So if you get, if they take a, let's just say it's a 4 year at 28 per year, which is around, quick math here, I think it's around 107, something like that. Yeah, 28 times four, it's 112. So that's about 112.
We were close
on the totals, but then you guarantee half of that, or a little over than half of that, which would give you to that number at $63.5 million, $64 million. You sign that immediately.
Yep.
If you're Terry, you put pen to pad immediately. You tell your agent, fly your ass back here, drive your ass back here. I don't know where his agent lives.
Send me the DocuSign.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what his mode of transportation is, but get your ass back here if you're not here, and then we're going to go in and we're going to sign this thing together. So I'm optimistic that we are going to see that Terry contract very, very soon.
Let's go to the Rude Guest Hotline and talk to our buddy Eric Flack of Channel 9, the award-winning reporter who's been covering everything going on with the stadium. Commanders trying to land a deal to bring RFK 2.0 to fruition. Rude is the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. So, Eric, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Thank you. I know, speaking of minutes, you spent a lot of them at the hearings yesterday. 6 hours of basically interrogating team president Mark Klaus, so I think had a 10-minute break to go to the bathroom at some point. Give us some of the details. What actually happened over those 6 hours?
Well, I think that the mayor and the team president got pretty good grilling from the council members who are skeptical. I think headline issues that took up the most back and forth in a negative to the stadium light are transportation issues, as well as parking structures and labor agreements, and whether or not the entire RFK site is going to be a pro-union site. All of these sound maybe really boring to an average Commanders fan. They're all really important to whether this RFK deal gets approved tomorrow in the initial vote. There were some concessions made by the Commanders both before the hearing as well as kind of on the fly as it relates to maybe putting the pause button on the third of the three parking garages, which neighbors really don't want because they think it's ugly. There are commitments now to invest in increased transportation and metro. The one outstanding issue that has not been resolved is that union issue, in which the mayor sides with the Commanders as far as not wanting a requirement that all jobs related to the stadium development, as well as other RFK developments on the property, as well as the people who work in those developments, are union workers. Right now,
who's fighting for that?
The mayor There are council members who are pro-labor who want blanket agreements that union labor only will be used. There are union groups that are that were there in person that are advocating for labor requirement, union requirements, I should say, to be used. The mayor's argument is that unions, which are regional, not local to D.C., tend to bring in out of D.C. workers. So she says she goes to work sites all the time filled with workers with Virginia license plates, Maryland license plates with jobs. So the idea is union jobs don't always benefit D.C. residents. The other side is that union jobs protect workers, and that's an issue that has not been resolved because that's one that the commanders, I've been told, are not really going to budge on. But yeah, it was a grilling, and I think that the temperature rose more between the mayor and council members than Mark Klaus. Mark, the commander's president, Mark Klaus, if you know him and have had any interaction with him, he's great. He's good in a room. He works a room really well. He came from a really high power job at Campbell Foods. He's the guy who, by his own admission, put two flavors in Oreos, like literally. He's good at his job, and he keeps the temperature low. Any conflict was between the mayor and D.C. council. But it was two rounds of questioning, a lot of grilling, a lot of hard questions, and some issues not resolved.
So, long way of saying here, where do we stand? What does it mean for what's next? The vote tomorrow, then, you know, more votes later if it passes. Kind of, you know, what's the temperature? You mentioned kind of the what's going on in the room, but just in general with the council, and where do us little peons stand with stadium stuff?
The vote is at, well, the session starts at noon tomorrow, first vote. They have five votes. They need eight. One little nugget I have for you all is that I was on the phone. I've been calling people down there at City Hall, talking to, you know, my sources within the staff of various council members. And this was a conversation with a high-ranking staff member of a council member who is pro-stadium. And he's like, how do you think this is going to go? And I said, well, why are you asking me? I think I need to ask. I was calling to ask you how you think it's going to go. And he was like, well, let's count votes. And I'm like, what do you mean count votes? I thought you're counting votes. I'm supposed to be asking you. The point being, I was a little bit surprised that the people behind this deal are still counting votes up there. The mayor was asked after this marathon session yesterday whether she has the votes. She said yes. When asked to elaborate or specify, she declined to do so. And she said, well, I don't want to do it before the deal is done. I have been told that Council Chair Mendelson, who is the guy who updated the mayor's deal and got almost $800 million additional funding over 30 years back from the commander's revenue back, from the original deal, I've been told that he is confident. So you hear a lot of "I'm confident." You don't hear a lot of people who can say, "Okay, the three extra votes that we need are X, Y, and Z." I think they're at seven. I think it's that eighth vote, which they only need because of some tax implications, 2/3 majority as opposed to a simple majority. It's that eighth vote that I think people don't know where it's going to come from yet.
So who, you don't know the names, I guess, but like we know the four from the beginning. Mendelson would be five. Who would you guess are the other two, and who is adamantly opposed? I know Nadeau is like, if we need to spend a penny, we're not doing it. Yep. Other than her, are there like hard and fast no's that you could tell from the hearings are clearly just not on board?
We have Charles Allen in the leaning no category. Charles Allen, big transportation guy. I've known him for a long time, has long been an anti-stadium, let's not use the land for a stadium guy. But he's also a smart guy and can read a room. And there are those who believe he will ultimately vote yes. But, and I asked him yesterday when I spoke with him, I have been guilty of saying you're a no vote, a never stadium vote. Are you moderating at all? And he kind of said, well, no, I mean, we're trying to get the best deal we can. He kind of says, well, I'm a no vote, but he also acknowledges that he's trying to get a good deal for the city. So, you know, if you're trying to get a good deal for the city, you seem like you're open to it in some way, shape, or form. I mean, Nadeau is checked out. She wasn't even there. She didn't even take part in the hearing. Alan is very engaged. The two,
well, she didn't even go to the hearing on it.
She did not. Cool. She did not. She's out. And she reposted. The Washington Post editorial board came out today and put out an article saying that they oppose the stadium as well. And she reposted that.
Editorial board opposed the stadium.
The Post editorial board today put out a long piece saying it's corporate welfare and they wanted to come to D.C. anyway. So why are we giving them all these tax dollars when they were wanting to be there anyway? And it's a sweet site and, you know, it's not a good enough deal. The other two votes, I think, in my opinion, are Christina Henderson and Janice Lewis-George. Christina Henderson has been very quiet, but she's been attending everything. She has been deep discussions with the Commanders for a long time. I think that's one. Janice Lewis-George had questions about labor and used her questioning about the union issue yesterday, but seemed to be satisfied with the answers that she got. And then you're looking at Zachary Parker, Robert White, and Matthew Frueman. If Allen is a no, you have Zachary Parker, Robert White, and Matthew Frueman to be that eighth vote. Zachary Parker is hard publicly that there needs to be a union deal, like he's posting on social media. So he would be at a complete about face. Robert White has been hard questioning, and if he votes for it, would also seem to be a public about face. And I always question whether politicians will do an about face when it will make them not look great. And they're not going to get what they want, right? It's not like they're going to get their demands met. And so then that leaves Matthew Frueman, who has told me that he wants to help out the Commanders. It's like he wants the deal, but he has been big on it's moving too fast. That's his thing. It's moving too fast, I can't adjust the details. It's moving too fast. And I just wonder whether he will blow up the whole deal thing over this has moved too fast for me.
So, Eric, let me jump in here real quick. Yep. Got about a minute left. But we know that if they vote yes, then there's another vote on September 17th. They'll come back and they've got to do it again. And things could change and the vote could go differently. If they don't actually get it passed, though, if the vote is no tomorrow, then what?
Well, then they can always bring it back again. It's not like you know, you're in a court of law where, you know, you get, you know, found not guilty of a crime and they can never retry you.
Got it. They could vote again in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think what would be much more likely is they just keep on going round and round and round until they get some sort of a deal. The question tomorrow is, do they change the deal to get an agreement so much that the Commanders then are not, they're like, well, that's not the deal we agreed to. All of this is going to play out tomorrow.
Eric, thank you as always, man. Informative and dizzying at the same time.
Yeah. You got that?
Yes, I think got so. It. That's the best. Right, thank you, Eric. Always good.
All right, so I got to thank Mark. Mark just sent this to me, PizzaFan101 on Twitter.
Nice.
He just sent this article from USA Today. Everything's all AI, right? Everything's all about AI, all the various AI things, business plans, everything. And well, AI also makes record predictions.
Okay. Right.
And the USA Today put out an article, and I don't know which AI platform, I don't know if it's ChatGPT or Grok or one of the millions of different AI, whatever things that are out there, which one did it? But I'm just going to give you a little setup before we get to the Commanders. All right. So it went around and it gave a win projection for all 32 teams. Okay. They used Google Gemini, I guess is what they used. All right. So just looking at a couple. So AFC East, they have the Bills leading there, going 12-5. Okay. Makes sense.
Yep.
Patriots maybe taking a leap up, 9-8. Dolphins 8-9, Jets 7-10. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonable. Then look at AFC North. That's like, it's a little low. They have the Ravens 11-6, but okay, they got them atop. Bengals 10-7. I assume that would be good enough to get to the playoffs. Who knows? Steelers 9-8. Browns 5-12. Then we go down. AFC South. Guess it makes sense. Texans 11-6. Jags make a nice leap, 9-8. Colts 7-10. Tennessee 4-13. All right, let me just cut to the chase now. Let's go to the NFC East. They've got the Eagles, all right, makes sense, leading the division, 11-6.
All right.
Wow. They were 14-3 or
Google
six,
Gemini
six
has
losses. That's a lot.
The Dallas Cowboys second, 10-7.
Okay.
It's a three-game improvement.
It has the New York Giants going 8-9. It has the Washington Commanders going from a 13-win team to a 6-win team this year.
Wow.
That, if that happens, there are going to be some people on suicide 13. Watch. That is, well, that
they were,
is
on, they were 12. They were 12-5 last year, right?
Right.
All right.
Won two games in the playoffs.
So 14, right, 14 and
that
six.
Is a drop-off.
Google Gemini.
Hold on,
Google yes. Gemini. 12,
so it's also, a six, it's also six AI. Win difference.
I mean, it's just random. I you know what? I put zero stock in that. Zero. Actually, less
well,
than
zero. Well, they're high on, I guess, the Cowboys because they have Dak back, right?
You could see that happening. I mean, a three-game improvement when you get your quarterback back.
But they have the Giants. You know what?
They have the Giants ahead of them.
Ahead of the Commanders.
Yes, Cakes. That's why I said you would be infuriated.
Take your computer, okay? let's move this and throw it right out the window. And can you sacrifice your computer?
Now.
It's already beat up. Just throw it out the window, please.
Even the USA Today, which wrote the article, says that it would be an unheard of conclusion in the district for them to finish 6-11. And it seems impossible, barring an injury to Jaden Daniels. But the chat bot, Google Gemini, I guess their whole rationale is that Washington's going all in, and it just could struggle to integrate all the new pieces. And so that's how it came up with, this must be a dumb AI.
It's like that AI missed some school.
I mean, the only way they're going.
I put that on like 10% chance.
That's a low seed AI. I mean, we hear about GPT number one, Grok number two.
Have you ever used Google Gemini before right now?
I think we use it every time you do a Google search. That's the first AI kind of thing that pops up.
Have you ever willingly used Google Gemini?
I've never sought it out.
Yeah, thank you. It's like searching with Bing.
But hold on. That's jarring. That is jarring. They've got Google Gemini has the Commanders dead last in the NFC East.
The only thing that might be worse, and Drab called me out for it last week. He came in and looked at my computer. He's like, are you using Microsoft Edge as your browser? And I said, yes. Yep. And he sneered at it like it was Happy Gilmore 2.
Cakes is in a such fan. A box that just whatever comes standard in front of it. He's not another great guy.
I've got Google Chrome on my bottom toolbar.
Nobody uses Edge.
Apparently, I'm the only guy.
All right, hold on.
So but is Edge supposed to be better than Chrome?
I don't. Do you think I know?
Chrome.
I use Firefox. My Chrome I've had issues with.
Mm-hmm. The only way they're winning six games is if there's a major injury.
Well, they say Jaden Daniels goes down. Correct. You can see it. But outside of that. So let's take, and they're not saying there's an injury. They're just saying they think it could be difficult to integrate all these different pieces. You know,
that's what training camp's for.
Okay. So let's go around the room. I know what we think. I think that them winning 10 games is, and maybe I'm stupid, and it's been proven before, but I put it like a 10% chance, and it would be a major injury. So I totally disagree with this. To win six games.
Yeah.
What do you, Cakes?
Less than a 0% chance they win six games or less.
I would go higher. I mean, I don't think it's likely, but 30% chance.
What do you think is the likelihood?
That they go 6-11, I would say 30% chance.
All right, Jason.
I think that they're more likely to go the opposite of that.
11-6.
If they don't have an injury to JD?
Yeah.
Less than 30.
But the 15? Schedule...
15?
The schedule is more difficult.
The schedule is more difficult, and I keep pointing this out. Now, the playoffs... You can't take that away from them. But they were 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat Will Levis and Penix
and Trey Lance
right.
and Kenny Pickett.
Yep.
So you can make an argument
and we won a bunch
that
of one
we're
score
very
games.
Fortunate.
Won a bunch of one
particularly
score games.
At the end, that 5-game winning streak kind of changes your perception. If they were 7-5 and let's say they went 2-3 down the stretch and were 9-8, you'd have different expectations. But instead, they won 5 in a row, facing these backup quarterbacks for the most part. And so your perception's different. But the playoffs were impressive wins.
Yeah, to go on the road to both Tampa and Detroit, and they just smacked Detroit in the face a bunch of times, which I loved. Yeah, that is not happening. There's no chance, again, unless Jaden goes down, Terry holds out the entire year. There's no way they're winning 6 games or less.
I mean, again, here's your last 5 quarterbacks they face,
I want to hear
TV.
From people, 800-636-1067. What's your take on the USA Today's article using Google Gemini? And their prediction is that the Commanders will finish 6-11.
Cakes, here are your last 5 quarterbacks. You can give me ding or buzz on whether they're good or not that they faced last year. So they're 7-5.
Right.
They lost 3 in a row. Will Levis.
Not good.
Spencer Rattler.
Pretty bad.
Almost lost him.
Would have been Jalen Hurts, so it was Hurts, but then Pickett finished 3 quarters.
Now, well, that if was you a want huge to be difference. Specific, Hurts did play in the game.
Yeah, he did.
He played 10 minutes.
He did play in the game.
Okay.
So I give that a
and
ding.
Devontae dropped the ball that would have sealed the game.
Oh, and that's... then it was Penix and Trey Lance.
Penix played well in the game.
Penix was decent.
Right.
Trey Lance doesn't I'm just count. Saying that you didn't face Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen down the stretch.
Any market out there for my guy, Trey Lance? I know that's not a thing.
But here's the deal.
I backed the wrong horse.
Where is he?
I
think he's at his, on his couch.
I don't know if he's been signed.
Wow.
5 of the first 8 are on the road. And Green Bay won't be easy. Atlanta won't be easy. The Chargers won't be easy. Dallas won't be easy. You know Kansas City won't be easy. Mm-hmm. They've got some tough roadies in the first.
Trey Lance on the Chargers.
Yes. Is he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't realize that.
I just want to say, of all the things I've read leading up to 2025, that's the most disturbing, that's the most jarring, that's the one I have the most guttural reaction to. I don't care where you rank Jaden Daniels. I don't care what you think of our running back room. I don't care what you rate the defense. Google Gemini's prediction of us going 6-11, that's upset me more than anything I've read.
Well, the most offensive thing is they have the Giants ahead of the Commanders.
Yeah.
The cellar-dwelling Giants.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. Let the Giants finish atop you.
But is it possible, again, I don't think this is likely, but is it possible that the Giants, most people respect Daboll as a coach, that with Russell Wilson, that they take a jump up? Just forget about them surpassing
Washington. Maybe a slight jump.
Okay. So it's possible that they could improve, and is it possible that Washington has less wins?
Sure, both of those things are possible.
Yeah, but 6 is bad. If you said, you know what, maybe even 8-9, that they lose all these one score games that they won last year, they're not going to get lucky on Hail Marys, etc. I would say, man, that sucks. But maybe that's possible. This seems crazy to me.
Did dumb Gemini take into account the first 4 opponents for the Giants? They're on the road here, Week 1. They're on the road 2 at Dallas. They host Kansas City and they host the Chargers. That is an 0-4 start if I've ever seen one in the history of the world.
They won't
that
go.
That is 0-4.
They won't go 0-4. How much you want to bet on?
I get 0-4, 1-3.
No.
I get
you
both
just
of
said,
those.
$10, you just said it's an 0-4.
$10 they won't go.
I get 0
he's our ultimate backtracker.
I'm trying to give myself
Eric,
a better
here's
out.
Here's the deal. The 49ers went 12-5 2 years ago, went to the Super Bowl, right? The following year? S happens. They went 6-11.
Yeah, but you had a bad. You had injuries and all that stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That can happen.
This is not talking about injuries.
Well, they're not saying they're going to be injury free.
No, but they're not saying. Oh, they're predicting a major injury. They're saying.
Okay, but NFL teams have major injuries. They always do.
Some.
Not always to the quarterback.
We kind of avoided them last year.
With
key guys.
Things just go bad.
Understood. Get the bet book out. I'll take it for $5, not for $10, that the Giants start 0-4,
right,
if you're willing to take it.
Put it in.
Bang, let's go.
All right, Drab.
Let's go.
I wanted to bet that, but you actually sold me, and then you backtracked.
I mean, I'm just trying to get more favorable terms, JP. It's the way
he always puts himself in a hole. Drab, where do you stand on this 6'11"? Do you think
I don't know. I wouldn't care what an AI anything predicted for standings.
Well, way out of the realm of what I would think would be possible for this team.
No, nothing's impossible. If it said the Chiefs 6-10, okay, that would be weird. But like the Commanders haven't had a long history of being dominant year in and year out. I think they're
better this year than last year. The schedule would be more difficult, but I think they're on paper better.
Well, they had an much easier schedule. So if the schedule's more difficult and they won a lot of
So you think 50, 6 wins is a reasonable projection?
No, I mean, 7 or 8 is definitely possible.
See, had the playoffs not happened, you could have convinced me that they were a little counterfeit if the playoffs didn't happen.
Yeah.
But the playoffs did happen.
Right.
They won on the road in Tampa. That was a good win. Then they stomped all over Detroit.
They embarrassed them.
And what you saw in Detroit is what you saw a lot throughout the season. Where Tressway basically didn't punt. Mm-hmm. They're an offense with a punter that doesn't punt because their offense is that good. It's hard to take that away from them.
You know what we should do? We should short Google stock for having Gemini. It's such an embarrassment to think the Giants are going to have a better record than the Commanders.
All right,
that's laughable.
All right, the same guy just asked ChatGPT to make predictions. They have the Commanders between 7 and 9 wins. Now, that's also disappointing, but it's not as bad as 6.
I mean, you could live with 9 wins.
Yeah.
You could live with it. It wouldn't be great, but you could live with it.
I could easily see 9 wins, tougher schedule. You know, you're not going to have as many close wins go your way. 6 wins, that's catastrophic.
6 wins.
6 would be
six
Gemini.
Wins is catastrophic.
To the core. Yeah.
Somebody ask Gronk. Somebody ask Gronk.
That first interaction with Gronk.
I'm going to ask Gronk right now.
What are you predicting? Gronk
has him 9-8, third in the NFC East.
Behind Philly and Dallas.
We need to get let's ask all the bots, all the AI joints. What is their prediction?
Well, we can ask 4 bots right here.
I already predicted them with like 12 or 13 wins. Right. I'm just way out
there.
Dude,
that's jarring to me. I don't know. I'd like to hear from people. Are you just no big deal?
You could probably see anything from 6 to 11 or 12.
I can't really see 6.
I'm saying when you're looking at predictions, you probably could find.
Right, but I'm saying in my world, 6 is below.
6 is bad.
That's bad. That's like predicting 2.
Yeah.
Well, then you're picking number 1 in the draft. Like you have 2 or 3
wins.
That's
really bad, dude. 6 is really bad.
It's not great.